And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
With the final 3 weeks of countdown to the midterm elections, and with an apparent surge of anti-administration sentiment turning the poll colors blue, many in the environmental movement are hoping that a change in the balance of power in the nation's capital may be a signal that earth issues may finally be heard. Today, we hear from Republicans for Environmental Protection and go in-depth with a leading voice from the Christian right who brings a commitment to the earth into the hearts and spirits of his evangelical family. When your voice of the earth sings out, here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Today, we're taking a very special journey to discuss and explore, amongst other things, the emerging movement within what some would call the conservative Christian community to open their hearts and minds to the need to help save and restore this most miraculous gift of life we call the earth. I come to this with an open heart and mind. As my spiritual roots were born from the Christian faith, I was born into a family of serious Christian seekers who lived with a daily commitment to walk in personal relationship with Jesus. I can say from my experience, it is not an easy path to follow, and their devotion was more than I could follow. And so I found myself seeking answers by going to the source, to the woods and rivers, the seasons and the songs that filled the woods with a language that I continue to learn from every day of my life. And now it seems the paths are converging, as we witness a massive movement within the faith community to turn once again to the earth for the gift that it is, and to do good works in service to the guidance which is now being studied in the sacred scriptures of the Christian faith. Some will understand that rejoicing and hallelujahs are now echoing into the deep spirit of the woods and fields and mountains. We go in depth with Dr. Matthew Sleet, who is leading a life in faith with the earth. We dedicate segments 2 and 3 to this very special walk and talk. But we first bring you some thoughts from the policy director of Republicans for Environmental Protection and what is at stake in the upcoming midterm elections. It's all coming up when your voice of the earth continues following the news. So now, the news. As we reported last week, the population of the United States has officially reached 300 million people. Some unknown baby crossed over that line in the wee hours of Tuesday morning. We'll add our next 100 million before the year 2050. Iceland has decided to resume commercial whaling immediately. Following 2 decades in which the nation agreed only to take whales for research, Iceland joins with Norway in sanctioning commercial hunts for members of the world's largest family of creatures. Although the numbers are small, limited to 79 total whales, some feel Iceland is testing the waters of public opinion to measure the impacts a resumption of whaling may have on its global legacy if it were to continue whaling into the future. The forest fires, which have besooted the islands of Indonesia for weeks, are bringing cries and tears to the eyes of the nation's population of 6,000 orangutans. Game officials state that if the fires spread within the boundaries of the Tanjung Puting National Park, which is home to the intelligent creatures, they will evacuate the individuals to save their lives. Many of the fires have been set by hunters, who rely on the fires to generate new growth of tender leaves, which attract deer to the clearings and make it easy for them to hunt. Zimbabwe, one of Africa's traditional tourist destinations, renowned for its diversity and wealth of animal life, finds itself in increasing economic chaos, which is ultimately resulting in the loss of its world-class wildlife. Game reserves set aside to protect animals, including the African elephant, are drastically understaffed, resulting in poor, if any, effective management. Some elephants are heading into villages in search of food and water and end up being shot, often in retaliation for damage to homes and even villagers. Zimbabwe, which is actively attempting to lure tourists who are attracted to the wildlife, are in fact scaring them away, as word is spreading about the gruesome deaths of elephants by poorly managed game wardens. In a related story, young elephants in India are ravaging villages and people, and even being seen attempting sex with other species. Researchers surmise that the younger elephants, which traditionally rely on the long-term behavioral guidance by older elephants, find themselves growing up without such natural wisdom, as the oldest elephants are taken in an effort to manage populations. And finally, the legendary internet giant Google has announced that it plans to construct the largest customer-owned solar electric system at a corporate site, with final projections of a 1.6 megawatt site capable of powering 1,000 California homes. Google's announcement follows on Microsoft's commitment to place 2,288 solar panels at its research site in Mountain View, California, which is projected to produce 480 kilowatts, or about one-fourth the size of the Google Sunplex. And on a final happy note, with the top 10 list of most polluted places on Earth being released, none are in the United States. And that's the news. A few reminders. To our many new listeners, first a welcome and a thanks for tuning in. Now here's what you want to do. Come here often and start exploring the hundreds of topics covered and available for streaming whenever you want. From the homepage, open up the topic headings. You'll find shows on animal intelligence, the future of our oceans, things to do to help serve and save the earth, special shows on drawing plants, learning bird calls, all the things you'll need to know to make life on Earth most meaningful. And when you find something interesting, be sure to tell your friends to come along. It's always here at www.wildsidenews.com. And now to our first feature. In the weeks before the midterm elections, as the campaign slurry turns toxic, nevertheless, some very serious issues are being discussed about deep American issues like freedom, liberty, privacy, local control of the land, and much more. Today, we get political as we hear from a leading conservationist who traces his roots to the historic conservative values, which were the seeds of the environmental and wilderness movements. We're less than 3 weeks away from the midterm elections, and this is a very political year. I just feel something in the air that I haven't really felt for quite some time, particularly for a midterm election. This almost feels like it's a presidential year. There's a lot of people who are awakening to the significance that politics plays in our lives, and it's actually kind of, I think it's a good thing for America right now that we're actually starting to really pay attention to this, and the awakening is coming from many, many different perspectives. I'm really pleased to have on the show, again, Jim DePeso, who is the Policy Director for Republicans for Environmental Protection. Jim, welcome to the Wildside News.
Great to be with you, Sydney.
Would you agree that it seems as if there's a reawakening of the significance of politics in our world these days, at least for people like you and me and those of us on the street here?
Well, I think you're right, Sydney. I mean, there's a certain amount of electricity in the air. Here we are 3 weeks to the day before the election day, and the impact of this election could be momentous. It is very likely, or at least I'm hopeful, that turnout will be high, and that people are going to really spend some time thinking through their choices, checking out the candidates, really delving into what they're saying and how they're saying it, and looking at this as an opportunity for the citizens for whom this republic was established to really take charge of their government and let their elected representatives know that they expect them to work on solving problems, to work together constructively, to minimize political game playing and partisan bickering, and just try to seek the common good and work for it.
Your focus, Jim, is on the environment, and as a Republican, you're concerned about and fight for the environment from that perspective. And there's many Republicans, conservatives who share that perspective. I think your message right now, as of today, is broadening out to even a sort of a larger concern for for our country and its future.
Yeah, I think anybody who has paid any attention to the goings-on in Washington, D.C. for the last 2 years and probably for the last 6 to 10 years, it's very clear to me that Congress has become increasingly, almost dysfunctional. It's almost like watching a bad soap opera on television. The Congress, this past year has spent less time actually working, a 9-to-5 job like the rest of us have to do, getting the public's business done, fewer days on the job. And when they are on the job, they're spending too much time, bickering and fighting and, giving much more attention to, what the lobbyists want, chasing money, looking for, short-term political advantage, than solving the very real issues that this country is facing. I mean, there's a lot of issues. There, there's health care, there's foreign policy, and from our standpoint, there are some very serious environmental issues. I don't even want to call them environmental. They're broader than that. It has to do with our quality of life, the safety of our nation, and public health. And by that, I'm referring to the serious energy issues that we have facing us that Congress has not solved, the climate change issue that is growing more serious by the day, our overdependence on oil and what that means for our relationships with other countries overseas. There are just a whole host of very serious concerns that the public has a right to expect their Congress to go to work on and roll up their sleeves and try to solve. But the Congress just hasn't been doing that. So I think the opportunity here in November, regardless of what you are, whether you're a Republican, a Democrat, or an Independent, or a Libertarian, or whatever you are, is to really send a message to our elected representatives, both the incumbents and the challengers, to that the people expect the Congress to make a serious run at trying to solve the nation's problems and to work together constructively as adults. And to put an end to these games and the bickering and all the other distractions that are interfering with that.
Certainly some people are talking about the possible change in the balance. Unfortunately, there has been an imbalance. One side has ruled, and they've ruled unflinchingly and in many respects brilliantly, but there's too much power consolidated into one side. So there's no oversight. There's no capacity, even in many cases, for effective debate. We can't even talk anymore about these issues. And I'm not saying it's just a Republican thing, but it's just it has to do with a power issue. What are your thoughts in terms of trying to restore a balance? Do you think that's an important aspect?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you go back to the Founding Fathers. They designed a constitution, a constitutional structure that was just brilliant. And one of the fundamental principles of our constitutional structure is checks and balances. If you give anybody too much power, and I don't care who they are, whether they're Republicans or Democrats or whatever they are, any group of people or individual who has too much power is going to exert harm on the Republic. And the Founding Fathers knew that, and that's why they built in this brilliant system of checks and balances. Well, that system is sick right now. There are not enough checks. The Congress is not engaging in oversight of the executive branch, which is something that is an obligation for Congress. Maybe we need a Truman Committee to look into, bad contracts, misallocation of resources, throughout the whole panoply of federal government activities. We need Congress to do its job, and part of that is to exercise oversight. And as part of exercising that oversight, it has to be, this doesn't mean that, members of both parties have to agree with each other, but they have to agree to work together constructively. Because years ago, that's what happened. Democrats and Republicans worked together constructively to run the Congress as the people's lawmaking body. They exercised oversight, they dealt with public issues, and sure, they disagreed and fought with each other on the issues. They were working together and following the constitutional structure that the founders intended. That's not happening right now, and that just needs to change.
An interesting aspect, talking about politics, particularly as it relates to Republicans and business, I think, as I look back on this, I think when corporations, and I'm not anti-corporate at all, but I do feel that What we're in a bit of a war with right now with this particular administration is the fact that the corporations now have inordinately more power over policy than the people. And I don't know that that was ever supposed to be the way it was done. It was supposed to be of the people, by the people, for the people. And this, from a Republican perspective, how do you deal with this difficulty between the power of business, which is supposed to expand and be profitable, and its role in politics? Because I think that's where we're having some problems.
Well, again, and I go back to the constitutional principles of checks and balances. True conservatives do not believe that business should just have free rein to do whatever it wants. That's not truly conservative. Too much power concentrated in government is bad. Too much power concentrated in various private entities is bad also. The old saying, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And a truly conservative Congress would take note of that and look for ways to ensure that businesses do not exercise so much power that they are impairing the common good. And again, we need Congress to take note of that again and make sure that certain special interests, are not calling all the shots.
You know, one of the things that I find interesting is the fact that, for example, in the last presidential election, the environment was almost not even mentioned, which I find so extraordinary, because now it seems, here we are 2 years later, and the environment, through hurricanes and concerns about global warming and other issues, is at least in the lexicon, it's discussed in the news. We hear about all the storms and things, but there's not a healthy environmental debate going on right now. It has to do with almost secondary and tertiary kind of media issues as opposed to on-the-ground issues. What do you think are some of the concerns that really need to be dealt with on a really direct basis that Congress should be facing right now?
On day one next year, Congress needs to sit down and start drafting a rational energy policy for this country. The bill that was passed in the last session, again, it was the typical Christmas tree special interest bill, a little something for everyone, but it didn't really establish the type of rational strategy that we need. And there are a couple of things that we need to work on right away. One is we have to reduce our dependence on oil. As long as we're dependent on oil, we will be dependent on foreign oil. There is no getting around that. We have to develop new technologies to reduce that dependence on oil and to create some more economic opportunities, both in our rural communities and in our major manufacturing centers. For number two, we need to have a climate strategy. We need to develop a national strategy to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from transportation, power plants, industry, and what have you. And we need to do that in a way that is smart and will unleash the power of markets and innovation and entrepreneurship to develop those technologies that will reduce emissions, clean up the environment, and create those economic opportunities. That's the type of strategy we need. And Congress needs to get to work on that on day one next year.
In some respects, some people say, well, gee, that sounds like a very progressive, almost liberal, that sounds like a Democratic perspective. But I don't believe that that's true either. Because,
not at all. Yeah.
Because the Democrats are dropping the ball equally as much as the Republicans for a whole lot of different reasons. What I find interesting is what we're talking about now is a common ground. It's almost like a national party. We're fighting for our future. I personally believe we're literally fighting for the future of America. And if we don't do something here, we're just being led by people with blinders on. They don't seem to have this sense of where we're going and the fact that something must change.
Well, that's right. And when I'm talking about a rational energy strategy, I'm talking about a whole multiplicity of benefits that we could achieve if we just finally got smart on this. I'm talking about a more robust national defense, more constructive relationships with other countries overseas, less dependence on dysfunctional, tyrannical regimes that are either corrupt or writing checks for terrorists or both. I'm talking about developing economic opportunities, more opportunities for people to be in our rural communities to be more self-sufficient. These are not liberal or conservative. This is just common sense. This is the common good. And again, this is what the Constitution was established for, to promote the general welfare. And again, we need to find a way for Congress in both parties, members of Congress, to come together and work for the common good and put an end to the bickering and the game playing.
You know, as I go to the polls, there's a really good chance that I'm going to pretty much vote Democratic, because that's my leaning. Mm-hmm. Now, when you go to the polls, I should ask you how you'll vote, but I would guess that one would tend to vote more Republican.
I always give Republicans what I call the right of first refusal. If a Republican candidate's a good candidate, somebody who says the things that I think are important, then yes, I'm going to vote for that person. If the Republican candidate doesn't cut the mustard, and the Democrat does say the things I like, occasionally I've thrown a few votes at Democrats too. I'm not going to be shy about that. I tend to look at the individual's qualities and judge them for who they are.
I guess the point that I'm leading to is that is how the real world works.
Right.
I grew up in a family that tended to be Democratic, and hey, guess what? I'm a Democrat. And it may be the case that you, it's a similar case for you. And I think for a lot of people, that's kind of how it works. But that's what's keeping us kind of stuck, because we have these allegiances to the parties,
mm-hmm.
and unfortunately, the parties are becoming dysfunctional. And we need to take a step back, perhaps, from party politics and find common ground. How do we do that?
Well, I think it's going to take a willingness on the part of citizens to look beyond those allegiances, those old habits or the family allegiances, and really take a broader look at what's at stake. And what's important is that these very serious problems that we're facing as a nation, that they get solved. And whether they're solved by somebody with an R after their name or a D after their names or an I after their names, I don't care. I just want the problems worked on, because, again, the good of a country is more important than the good of any party. Always has been and always will be.
Well, it seems to me what we need is to open up tremendous opportunities for dialogue, because I don't think we do. As you say, the Republicans and Democrats right now, all they do is insult each other. If a Democrat brings up some sort of a bill, it's going to be summarily rejected by the Republicans, and vice versa, which is ridiculous. It's absolutely there isn't. I mean, if you think about can you imagine running a business that way, or any other endeavor in our society where it's one side or the other? That is a recipe for total disaster. We need to find a way to start to discuss these things in a way that eliminates as much as possible those party affiliations and have this dialogue to find the common ground. I really think that's critical for us, because otherwise there are no forums for us to even discuss these things.
Well, that's right. And I think part of it is, that there's a lot of reasons why, we've gotten to this state of affairs that we're in right now. I think there is, with the present programs company, accepted, of course, there's a little too much polarization that's encouraged by, talk show programs and television interview programs, where the goal seems to be to get the guests to yell at each other and not have a constructive discussion about, or a constructive debate about problems. And again, we're not saying that everybody always has to agree with everything, but we need to conduct our debates civilly and be willing to listen to ideas that the other person has, because, who knows, you just might learn something if you are willing to listen to somebody who maybe has a different point of view from you. None of us knows everything. None of us is infallible. And we all have something to learn from each other. And to the extent we're willing to put aside our emotional needs to be right all the time and be willing to learn from each other, I think our country will be much better off.
Well, let's shift now to a couple of specifics. Let's talk about Richard Pombo. That seems to be a very interesting race, and there's something to be learned from that. Do you have any thoughts?
Well, I think Richard Pombo epitomizes the problem you see when somebody goes back to Congress, maybe very well-intentioned, may have ideas about things he'd like to accomplish, and gets caught up in the system, in the ego games, the power games, the money games, and the person becomes a caricature rather than a public servant. And you get people who, at the risk of being crude, they start drinking their own bathwater and they think it's champagne.
Hmm.
So I think that Pombo just epitomizes or personifies a lot of what's wrong with Congress. too much focus on money games and power games and who's up and who's down, rather than conducting the public's business, solving public policy problems.
In the Pombo race, there's an interesting struggle going on within the conservative ranks from an old conservative, Tom McClintock. Talk about that.
Well, I understand that Mr. McClintock is running for lieutenant governor, and those of your listeners who really pay attention to politics may remember him as one of the leading candidates during the recall election in 2003 when Arnold Schwarzenegger was elected governor. And I think what a lot of the old-time conservatives are worried about is that you have a Congress that's been governed by Republicans for, the last 12 years, and our federal budget situation is as bad as it's ever been. We are in hock. We have a Republican Congress that has allowed our country to go into hock to the world's largest communist country. I can just imagine how fast Barry Goldwater is spinning in his grave right now at the very thought of that. We are facing trillions and trillions of dollars of unfunded liabilities when you go out over the next several decades and you look at all of the, you know, pension and Social Security and Medicare and other obligations that are not funded. They're not funded. And what's the Congress going to do about that? How is Congress going to resolve these unfunded liabilities that are just breathtaking in scope? And nobody is talking about it. There's no plan. There's no there's no discussion about this. It's just something that the politicians seemingly would just rather ignore.
Mm-hmm. From the perspective of a Republican for Environmental Protection, who are some of the voices that you're paying attention to from your side?
There are a number of candidates that Republican candidates that if this is going to be a Democratic year, we really hope that they don't go out with the tide. A number of members of Congress who have always been responsible on conservation and environmental issues, and they're in very tough races. Like, for example, in Rhode Island, Senator Lincoln Chafee is in the fight of his life. He's in a very, very close race. In fact, I think he's down a few points in the polls right now, and I would be very sorry to see Lincoln Chafee defeated, because he is a voice of reason, moderation, and civility in the Republican Party. He takes a great deal after his father, Senator John Chafee. A number of members of the House in Connecticut, Nancy Johnson and Chris Shays, for example, are in very close races. And again, these are voices of reason and moderation and strong conservationists that it would be a shame to lose. And one of the reasons I mention this is not so much out of partisan loyalty, but we need middle-of-the-road centrists in both parties. People who have a habit of working across party lines are willing to sit down with their counterparts and try to reason out a middle-ground solution to a public policy problem. Because, let's face it, most Americans are probably somewhere in the middle. They are willing to support mainstream middle-ground solutions. Not everybody's going to get what they want, but the solutions are workable and will advance our country forward. That's what we need. We need more mainstream middle of the roaders in Congress. What we don't want to see, what I don't want to see, is to have a Congress run by far right polarizers on the Republican side, replaced by far left polarizers on the Democratic side. We'll just be back in the same soup again.
I think that's how the game works. If you control the most vocal voices, you control the dialogue. And I'm with you. I'm a mainstream radical. I really feel we have to work on change right at the center. And that's what I keep working on. It's been a great conversation here. Maybe we'll talk after the election. We'll get an update at that point. Jim DePeso, thanks so much.
It was always a pleasure, Sydney.
Also, let's talk about your website. So if people want to find out more about Republicans for Environmental Protection, go ahead.
Yes, our website is www.rep.org. In fact, one of the features we've just put up there is our list of candidate endorsements. We only endorse Republicans, but we don't endorse all Republicans. They have to earn our support, and you can see the list of environmentally responsible Republicans that we have endorsed for this election cycle.
Well, good luck to both of us.
Well, thank you so much, Sydney.
We turn our attention from Green Republicans to a new and powerful movement that is spreading within the faith communities and turning their power and spirit to tackle a massive responsibility of caring for the earth which God hath provided. When your voice of the earth continues, here on the Wild Side News.
Melting polar ice was a dirty look. Shrinking glaciers, a nudge. Then dying coral reefs pushed us, hard. Rising ocean temperatures and extreme weather, an uppercut. Then record-breaking heat waves hit us right where it hurts. Has it occurred to anyone that maybe the Earth is trying to get our attention?
We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. To find out how, go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
There is an ancient adage that says that God works in mysterious ways. Well, to many in the environmental community, God appeared to work in mysterious ways, as those who claimed a personal relationship to God through Jesus shunned the environmental movement in ways often painful and certainly confusing. But something's changing, and in a moment, we find out the what and the why of the new greening of the cross of Jesus when your voice of the earth continues here on the Wild Side News. During the next two segments, we're going to take a gentle and meaningful path to common ground, as this environmentalist with Christian roots meets a Christian who has been led to change his life to serve the earth and the living in the service to his God. We welcome people of all traditions and hope this may help in mending the uncomfortable gulf between us. In the true spirit of compassion for all the living gift and wonder, we dedicate the following to our common path to peace on earth. Goodwill towards men. Those of us who've been working so hard to care for this earth and take care of the critters and the systems, the living systems, it's a daunting task because, as so many people recognize right now, the earth is going through a series of crises, whether it's global warming, mass extinction. There's a lot of people working very hard to help. One of the frustrations has been that there's been a tug of war amongst a certain, what some people refer to as the Christian right, and there's been sort of a mysterious challenge by the Christian right, almost in opposition to the environmental movement, and that's been complex, frustrating, and for many people just a little bit difficult to comprehend for various reasons. Well, one of the things that's happening is the fact that there is now an emerging, very active environmental movement that's spreading within the churches, and no better place for it to happen. Joining us right now is someone who's very much central to what's going on. I'm so pleased to have Dr. Matthew Sleet joining us here on the Wild Side News. Dr. Sleet, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thanks for having me here.
Dr. Sleet, you have a new book out called Serve God, Save the Planet, A Christian Call to Action. There's a lot of people who are saying, thank God. Tell us a little bit what led up to your writing this book.
Well, my background, my doctor degree stands for if I'm somewhere and you fall down dead, I try to resuscitate you. So it's medical doctor. And some of this got started by noticing a great increase in the prevalence of certain diseases, which I can attribute to nothing other than a degradation in the environment. For instance, when I started medicine, the breast cancer rate in this country was 1 in 19. When I decided I need to quit medicine and work full-time on saving the planet, the breast cancer rate was 1 in 9. I've been told by a number of oncologists who walked up to me recently, it's 1 in 7.
So what you're witnessing is a dramatic change in our health based on, because you are a scientist, based on changes in the environment. That probably is your conclusion.
Correct. And I see similar increases in the prevalence of disease in asthma and immune reactions. And in checking with friends who are veterinarians, they were witnessing the same thing in animals which live with humans, i.e. cats and dogs. they were noticing the same increase in immune responses and death due to cancer. If you're a scientist, you like to look for corroborating evidence somewhere, and that certainly was just that.
But how does this translate, then, into a Christian perspective?
Well, I went to the Bible and looked at what the Bible had to say about this. Incidentally, I think I have to give a disclaimer. For most of my life, I would have been called just a scientific thinker or a secular humanist, and I came to faith later in life. And when I did that, I rethought everything. Was the music I was listening to, was that spiritually good for me? Was the art I had on the wall, were the books I was reading things that I should be? And I went through a process of really reflecting on everything I was doing, and how was I parenting, and what kind of husband was I being. And the issue of environmental stewardship was one that I puzzled on, because it was something I had believed most of my life. I grew up in a farming area. I grew up with environmental awareness, it would be called. And then I looked around in this new group that I was with all the time, and no one seemed to be very interested or perhaps even hostile. And I wondered, well, just is my theology bad here? So I went to the Bible to have a see what the Bible had to say. And what I found amazed me was, and that was that the Bible starts off about life, starts with the tree of life, ends with trees of life, and that God is in the life business, and in the Bible, God values what he makes. Us, a bird, the Bible says that the Lord groans when a sparrow falls out of the sky. And I realized what we had done was, and only within the last 100 years in the church, was to make God into our own image as a kind of a corporate CEO, just interested in the bottom line. And that's not what I found in the Bible. And that's one of the things that people who believe in the Bible find so special, is that you have this immutable instruction manual about God and about how we ought to live. And in that manual, I found thousands of injunctions about just simply using things for our own wants. We're allowed to meet our needs, but not our wants. And so that's what got me started on this.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit, because I think a lot of people want to know, within your faith, within your community, what seemed to be the reason for the rejection, the turning against what otherwise is known as the environmental movement, tree huggers, etc.? What help us understand that, because that is, I'm sure, what you had to come to terms with yourself.
Sure. I think there's maybe about three issues that cause this great divide between people of orthodox faith or very conservative faith and concern and folks who are concerned about environmental issues. One is that about 100 years ago, as far as I can see, we really began to come off the farm, and we began to not have a direct relationship with the food that we grew. Up until that time, you look in religious art, you look in sermons, you look in hymns, and you see things like, for the beauty of the earth, and this is my father's world, and America is beautiful, and it goes on, that people believe, people of faith believe, that the earth was a gift from the Lord. But I believe that it was a separation that happened to everyone, not just people of faith, that we begin to think that there was no mystery in all of this life. And that maybe materialism was a better thing. And another thing that happened in more recent times, I believe, is that people who were, for for instance, pro-environment, bundled the issue, other issues, which Christians found totally unacceptable. It's kind of like when in the 1970, let's say, if you wanted to go to a car dealer and you wanted the car red and you wanted air conditioning, but you didn't want power windows, you could order all that. But it became bundled. If you got the power windows, you had to have the air conditioning. And the issues that got bundled with care of the earth, stewardship, were unacceptable to people who took their Bibles literally.
And I tend to absolutely agree with you that that was the turning point where things got very complex. I talk about that all the time. Could you be more specific? Because I think it's important for us to really make these distinctions, because that will help us to understand and separate these important issues.
Well, I think a third issue, and I'll wrap back to the...
Fine.
A third issue is that people who were scientific were often seen as people hostile to religion. And if you read books by Carl Sagan, for instance, who's kind of a very popular science advocate, they're very hostile to religion. And they're hostile to people who believe in the Lord. And I have found that the hardest way to win somebody over in any argument is to walk up and say, "You're stupid, and you need to change and be like me." So those kind of three conditions set up a division, which many people found it impossible to cross. And when given the choice of being pro-environment or standing by their church and their belief in the Bible, they chose to stand by their church and belief in the Bible. Because if they joined with the other side, they were not welcome even.
That's right. And by the way, I think you're absolutely right on. I think those are all really valid perspectives.
I'll give you an example. Sometimes I walk into a church which would be called very conservative or fundamental, and people are quite hostile to things environmental and may not believe that there's global warming or any problems, or if they are, they have no role in trying to address them, and they'll change extremely rapidly. As I speak to you, I'm borrowing a hybrid Prius from a friend for 2 weeks who was in one of those churches, and everyone in the church right then, right there, after talking for a few hours, went and changed all their light bulbs to compact fluorescents. 4 people in that church have bought hybrid cars. But when I walked in and started talking, nothing. No acceptance of things environmental. And I've gone back and I've kind of asked, "Well, why did you change? Or why?" And it was because they said, "Nobody ever told me." And a lot of people would say, "Well, you must have had your head under a rock, right? How could you not know about global warming?" No one told them in the language they speak. And I learned this in medicine. I learned a language of science. I learned a language of physiology and pharmacology and biochemistry. But when somebody came in with a bleeding ulcer, I didn't start talking medicalese, or I left them behind. Didn't mean they were a stupid person. They just didn't speak my language. I had to speak theirs. And I think that's been part of what's driven the divide, and I think that's probably what will... When we speak each other's language, I believe that's what will build a bridge between what has traditionally been an environmental world and traditionally a conservative Christian world.
Mm-hmm. From my perspective, because I've analyzed this quite a bit, I think, and this is where particularly during the 60s and 70s, I think the change really happened, is that the environmental movement, which actually started out as by old conservative men a lot during the 50s, was part of something that was very American, and everything felt right. But unfortunately, as you say, and the bundling is exactly the right term, the environmental movement got bundled with the anti-war movement, which became bundled with women's rights and gay rights and just a whole series of different things that certain people within the faith community would definitely have a difficult time with. And as you say, the unbundling, to be perfectly frank, the environmental movement was somewhat dominated by quote-unquote hippies who looked like Christ and spoke about peace and love, but as well were actively involved in smoking pot, and there was the concept of a free love movement, and all of these things became extremely difficult to sort out and became very threatening, and it was difficult to remain a Christian. It was just a process of association that took years to, and I think we're finally beginning to sort this out. Is it part of what you're discussing?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. You said it perfectly.
Yes. So we just have to be honest about these things, but what's amazing to me is the fact that from a Christian perspective, if we look back biblically, God created the heavens and the earth. I think part of the challenge that Christians have, and again, I'd like for you to define, when in terms of what you're referencing to your the faith-based or the Christian community, or as some might even say, the conservative Christian community, who are we talking about here? Because I know many, many Christians who don't feel this sort of perspective on the environment, but there seems to be some within the Christian community that have been bundled in, another way of bundling, with another side of a political movement, and let's discuss that to some extent.
Well, as I go about the country talking, half the time in secular settings, half the time in faith settings, conservative faith settings, I find, this is going to seem like I'm dodging the issue, but I find that the labels don't work very well. I find that there are people who advertise themselves as being extremely concerned about the environment who go home and live a life with as heavy a footprint as you can imagine. I find that there's people who say they could care less about global warming who go home and grow their own food and only travel 3,000 miles a year and use 100 kilowatt hours of electricity a month. And vice versa. And I found that the labels don't work really well. If you're looking at the world only in a binary sense, that is, that every 4 years you pull one or two labels, then the only way you see the world is as a binary thing. And I found that biologic systems, humans, faith, is much more complicated than that. So I'm not dodging, I don't believe it's accurate to lump people. The reason being that I see very rapid change on the part of what would be called very conservative churches about the issues of stewardship. One thing I do is bring with me a 120-year-old Nelson Study Bible and just flip it open to the 45 pages on caring for plants and animals.
Well, I agree.
And I introduced the fact that this is not new theology, it's orthodox theology to take care of these things and to value them.
Well, of course, I guess what I'm trying to address, because we're, as again, heading into this 3 weeks from now is another election, and
right.
Certainly there has been a lot of talk about how the faith base, that's what I'm trying to understand here better, is this concept of politically, it's being discussed as the faith-based community is somehow associated with the right wing, which is associated with the George Bush administration. Without getting too political, but I'd like to understand this better, which as well, it's no secret, has not been a friend to the environment. Somehow, we need to unbundle that as well. And that's what you're in the process of really doing, is really trying
right,
to open this up.
Somebody says, I really care about the environment, and I'm going to go out to Telluride and cross-country ski, and somebody says, I don't care about it at all, and I'm going to snowmobile. They can each point the finger at each other. And I will tell you that there are people in the conservative church who are very good at seeing hypocrisy of the other side, and that's That's a problem. We're all very capable of that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things my faith tells me is that's human nature. Christ talks about being able to see the speck. Actually, it was a mote, meaning a dust mote, in somebody else's eye, while not being able to see the beam or the 2x4. I think it's almost a little humor on his part. In our own eye, and it's obscuring our vision. So, because I talk to groups that would, I'm guess, vote all Democratic, and groups that I would guess vote all Republican, what I say is that this issue transcends politics. And I look forward to the day, it may not be this election, but the next one, when the politicians are trying to outdo each other for who can clean up the earth the fastest.
So where are we going? We continue this special dialogue when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
Peace, 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 I can hear the bugles sounding, roaming around my land, my city and my town. Peace, 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 I can hear the voices ringing louder while my bugle calls for peace.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool block skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sidney Wildsmith.
There is a revival happening in the hearts of the Christian community as God's gift is squandered, defiled, and potentially hid for what some in the faith community see as paradise lost. Creation care, the greening of the cross, whatever it is, there is a long-sought peace emerging as all those who care start walking and working to save the gifted wonder. Our conversation with Dr. Matthew Sleeth continues following this brief announcement.
The river's on the rise, swift and gentle like the breeze. It swallows everything but sky. Suffocates the trees. Here comes the water. Should I struggle or give in? And does it even matter if I sin? If I sink, if I sink or swim.
And so we continue our journey to explore our common earthly mission.
Now there ain't no more higher ground.
Well, let's continue to unbundle, because I really think that's what we're trying to do here, is to talk about the environment. The environment involves every single one of us. You're, as a doctor, you see the effects, whether if a woman walks in and she has breast cancer, whether or not she's a Democrat or Republican has no bearing on whether
exactly.
or not.
Okay. Exactly.
So,
and the Bible says, in teaching about this, and it's specifically teaching about how we all live in this world together, and how God cares for all of us and loves all of us, whether or not we believe in God even. It says that the Lord makes the rain to fall on the wicked and the just. So don't get too smug if you're in the just crowd. And unfortunately, the acid rain does the same thing, and the global warming does the same thing. And when we begin to see this as a shared interest, that's when I think you'll really see progress.
help open the doors for, I, like you, don't like to generalize, but somehow we have to have this conversation. Help us open the doors to some who, from an evangelical, whatever the, their Christian perspective, have been afraid to embrace caring for the earth. Really, somehow there's been a fear, or it's been perceived in a totally different way. Help them, help open that door,
right,
so that they can walk through.
The
and
corner. They've been backed into the corner. If they believe, and I've talked to these people all the time, they're in very conservative churches, they may work for the state EPA, and they keep their mouth shut about it. Because if they come out and say, I'm for the environment, somebody tries to polarize it and say, oh, well, you're for abortion, and you're for this and that, and they don't want to go there.
Right.
And it's not them that backed themselves into the corner. It's and so one question I get asked not infrequently is, what do you feel when you see somebody driving down the road in a Hummer? And I say, what I see is the person who has to be and can be my strongest ally 2 years from now. And the worst thing I can do is to back them into a corner where their pride is involved and they can't walk out of that corner. If that makes sense.
That's wisdom. That's called practical wisdom. Well, let's talk a little bit about the theological basis, the scriptural basis that has led you to feel comfortable really championing a simplification of lifestyle. You've actually taken this on a very personal level, and expanded this into the way in which your entire family lives. Why don't we talk a little bit about that, about how this has affected you and your lifestyle personally, and then let's talk about the theological basis.
Sure. Well, I looked at my Bible and I found the theologic basis for living simply, living frugally, being more generous, thinking of my neighbor more, and I took an accounting. Incidentally, I only meet about, I'm guessing, 1 out of 1,000 people who can tell me how much energy they use and what their actual footprint is, it's called. And there's no difference in right or left on that. So I took that accounting, and I didn't do it in Landsat satellite terms, which is, how many hectoacres, because that means nothing to a human being.
Hmm.
We don't really know how much a hectoacre is, but we know how many dollars we spend and about what a gallon of gas is and about what a kilowatt hour represents or how many we buy a month and how many dollars we spend. So I took an accounting of all that, and at the time I would have said I'm a great environmentalist. I recycle everything. I've never owned a car with more than 4 cylinders. My kids were raised in cloth diapers. I took that accounting, and I found that I was slightly worse than average, which in the United States, which perhaps for my income and being a doctor, I was maybe way better than my cohort, but being average in your footprint in the United States is being, the abominable snowman in the world, the 800-pound gorilla.
Yes.
And we set about a process of changing our own lives and moving from a doctor-sized house to one exactly the size of our garage, and cutting our fossil fuel use to a third of what they were, and our electrical use to about a tenth. So we were using about 120-130 kilowatt hours a month, and so forth and so on.
Wow, that's nothing.
And then I began talking about it. And I also, by the way, when Gandhi read that parable about the mote in the eye and of your neighbor and the beam in your own, he rewrote that, and he gives credit to the Bible as, be the change you wish to see in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that is wisdom from the Bible, and I'm all for it, and hardly anybody takes it. So that's what we did. And the Bible says, when you do that, when you clear up your own vision, then you're allowed to go and talk to others. And so that's what I began doing. And I wrote a book about our family change. How you have doctor's kids who have pretty much everything they want to going to being kids that have to wash the dishes because we don't have a dishwasher, dry the clothes because we don't have a clothes dryer, etc.
Now, from a personal, spiritual perspective, how does it feel to live a simpler life?
I am a much richer spiritual human being today. I may not have any income anymore, but I am wealthy in the ways that the Bible promises when you do something out of love of your neighbor.
Hmm.
By the way, the church has some vocabulary and some concepts that I would maintain that science is lacking, and that's why a couple years ago I wrote an editorial which appeared, I think, you're in San Diego, right?
Yes.
In the San Diego Tribune. And it was that environmentalists would fail without evangelicals. Because the concept of guilt and sin and sacrifice are ones that my faith owns. I may not practice all the time, but they own them. And people are going to have to change their lifestyle. They're going to have to make sacrifices. They need to feel guilty about the way they're living.
Good.
Apply those concepts. We're not going to get the change that environmentalists want to see.
That's interesting, because that is a perfect crossover. We both share such a similar sort of perspective on that. You know, there is a sense of guilt that the environmental community foists upon the rest of the world for over-consuming and destroying the earth. Here's a little something that I think needs to be addressed too. There was talking about bundling and talking about history. There was a period in the Christian movement, which I think partly was the change that you talked about, came partly and largely as a result of TV evangelicalism, which began to go after big bucks and big listenerships and massive churches and who knows what all. And I think there was an effort to have to justify such, and the rationale that was somehow translated into doctrine was that wealth and abundance was a sign that someone was living at right terms with God. Have you experienced that in the churches?
Well, that's certainly something that people who don't even believe in God feel when they get rich.
Exactly right.
That somehow they deserve it and they're a little bit better than their neighbor who doesn't have it. But I went to the Bible, and my Savior, Christ, only owned one coat, never had a home. As far as we know, really, he had to get his money out of the mouth of fish, which is an allegory, to pay his temple tax, and he only rode a horse once that's recorded, and it was borrowed. And says, you know, come to me, you who are weary and heavy laden, you know, which certainly describes modern society. We're just weary. None of us feel like, wow, I'm just happy. And I will give you rest. You know, take my yoke upon me and learn of me. I am humble and meek. And somewhere between that model of God and of my Savior to where I was living the doctor-sized life represented the work of my life. Was to get from one to the other. And I'm still working hard at it. And failing every day, but at least working at it.
Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, we don't have forever. We will continue this conversation in many ways into the future. I'm so glad that we can have this conversation. But talk a little bit now in terms of the larger expansion within the Christian community. How is this now spreading? Creation care, I guess, is the term that is comfortable, and I think it's a wonderful, wonderful term. But discuss now what's happening. You know, you're on the ground. You're traveling every week now,
sure.
All over the country. What are you seeing in the churches? To what degree is this manifesting?
Well, I think that when anyone lives their lives simply in a race to get as many things as man makes and gather them to themselves, they end up with a spiritual hole whether or not they believe in God. And that is felt in the church as well as outside of the church. And that, coupled with some leadership from the evangelical leaders around the country, the When you have a Rick Warren and a Dr. Kane at Judson College and the president of Asbury College and these very respected Christian institutions sign something that says, we've really got change here. We're going down the wrong path. And as C.S. Lewis said, if you're going down the wrong path, there's only one thing to do, turn around and go the opposite direction until you get to where you last off. And we need to change that. Those kind of very respected leaders, Rick Warren's book, Purpose Driven Life, has sold 20 million books. And people have to listen. And then there are people like me, and there's others who come around and talk about this or write about it, and they write about it in a language that people in church feel comfortable with. It's theologically based, and the advantage of the church is, for instance, if you want to have an environmental conference at a college, it takes all kinds of work, and you get together for 3 hours or a weekend. Church gets together every single week and discusses life and theology. And meets in small groups and is capable of very fast change. Mm-hmm. So I see the beginning of this.
Within the churches, how are people recognizing it? What are they looking for? What should they look for within their own churches across the country in the various faiths and recognize this as part of this emerging greening of the churches?
They need to study the Bible. They need to reassure themselves that the Bible talks about this from one end to the other, that the Lord did not drive a chariot and that sort of thing. This very humble Lord that they're following. And when they reassure themselves of that, they have a task in front of them, which is to change personally. And you get churches of 1,000 or 10,000 working as a group to change, and you'll see very big change very rapidly, I believe. And the tools are just being developed for churches to study together as a group and to work through these changes. This past weekend I met with a church for the second time. I preached there 6 months ago. There's 5 Sunday school classes going through a book about how to change, and they're all working on these issues as hard as they can.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do know this, that I'm very thankful. I mean, I really feel relieved that I'm seeing this movement in the churches. It's a welcome friend. There is no reason why the churches and the environmental movement shouldn't be walking hand in hand. And let's look forward to the future when we can do exactly that, because there's every reason that should be the way that we move together. I think there is so much in common between what people who are concerned about the earth and life on the earth and preserving the wonder and the mystery. To me, that is exactly what the Christian faith and other faiths are really involved about, and we need to come back together.
Right. There's no short of wonders in the world. There's just a lack of wonderment.
Mm. And Dr. Sleet, in terms of people finding out about your work and where you're going to be and finding out about your book, where should they go?
Well, the book is available in bookstores or at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And then there is a website by the same title, servegodsavetheplanet.org. And there are lots of resources on there and links to other Christian sites with people doing stuff about this. And there's a study guide for the book, Serve God, Save the Planet, that's free. You can just use it off the Internet. Can I leave you with one last thing of how this unites both sides? The book was originally published and is published now by Chelsea Green, which is a very respected environmental publisher.
They're but one of the top, yes.
They're right up there. But it was just bought, the paperback rights were bought by Zondervan, which is the largest Christian publisher.
That's right.
In the United States. So I think it shows how you can build a bridge with a common goal of handing this planet to the future generation as God intended us to do.
One of the things from that's going to have to happen, and maybe you and I can discuss this with others in the future, and that is, quite honestly, I feel there has to be some form of healing between these factions so that we can feel comfortable. There's a lot of embarrassment and a sense of guilt or wrong, coming from all sorts of different perspectives.
Absolutely. And you are the first person that said, we've got to do some healing here.
Yes.
And one of the things when I talk about people need to do healing on this issue, and I'm a doctor, so I'm allowed to use that word, is to point out how, for me, the great model of this is when apartheid ended in South Africa.
Mm.
And because there were people of faith, and because they were ministers, and because they believed their Bible, they stepped in, and the bloodbath that everyone predicted did not happen. And it's because there was the dialogue, people got to say where they had been wrong, people had to listen, and then there was forgiveness, and they moved on. And so I think you're very wise to bring that up. You can't work with somebody who you've got really bad history with. And, you know, if you've told somebody they're stupid because they believe in the Lord, or you've told somebody they're stupid because they believe you ought to take care of what the Lord made, you're absolutely right. You're the first person who said that. And the only way to heal is to love and to forgive.
And isn't that, after all, what Christ was talking about?
I think he said that a few times.
Well, thank you so much for your work, Dr. Sleet. I want to thank you so much for lending your voice here on the Wild Side News.
My pleasure, and God bless you and everyone who listens to your station.
Thank you so much. I welcome all my Christian friends and people of all faith to the Wild Side News, and hope we will form a common communion to serve the great wonder of the gift of life on earth, as we do each Thursday and any time on the archives when the voice of the earth sings out around the world. This is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios until we meet again, here on the Wild Side News.